Welcome to iHeartRadio Communities, a public affairs special focusing on the biggest issues impacting you this week. Here's Ryan Gorman.
Thanks so much for joining us here on iHeartRadio Communities. I'm Ryan Gorman, and we have some important conversations lined up for you coming up in a moment. I'm going to talk to a few top officials with the Federal Trade Commission and the National Association of Attorneys General. Plus, we'll check in with the Deputy U.S. Surgeon General for some guidance on staying safe this Thanksgiving, along with the benefits of the COVID-19 vaccines. Right now, to get things started, I'm joined by Colleen Tressler, Consumer Education Specialist with the FTC's Division of Consumer and Business Education, Heather Allen, Assistant Director for the FTC's Division of Financial Practices, and Abby Stimson, Director of the National Attorneys General Training and Research Institute's Center for Consumer Protection at the National Association of Attorneys General. They're here to offer some practical advice about things like budgeting, understanding your credit, dealing with debt, and organizing your finances. And we're also going to talk about how to spot, stop, and report scams and bad business practices that want to separate you from your money and your personal information. Thank you all so much for coming on the show. And Colleen, let me start with you. We're seeing prices rising on everything from groceries and gas for your car to housing and heating for your home. So making a budget seems to be more of a necessity these days than maybe, say, a simple New Year's resolution. What advice can you give to help people get started?
Great. Thanks, Ryan. And thank you for having all of us. You know, making a budget is a great place to start. It can help you figure out how you spend money and create a plan to help meet your day-to-day expenses, prepare for emergencies, and build savings to meet your long-term goals.
All right, so let's say somebody hears that and they're like, I'm in. What do they do first? What's the first step?
Well, one of the first steps to creating a budget is to gather your bills and write down your monthly expenses. That can include your rent or mortgage payment, childcare, a car payment, utilities, and insurance. And then there are more flexible expenses like gas, groceries, credit card bills, entertainment, clothing, haircuts, and incidentals like dry cleaning and birthday gifts. You know, it's also important to factor in unplanned expenses, and that can include car repairs or medical bills. All this will help you see what you might spend in a month. Then write down your monthly income, say from work or child support, and then compare. If your expenses are higher than what you bring home, consider where you can cut back on your spending. But if it looks like your expenses will be less than your pay, think about whether to spend or save the extra money. And you know what? To make it all easier, you can find a free budget worksheet to fill out every month at consumer.gov/budget. I'll repeat that. consumer.gov/budget.
All right. Thank you, Colleen. Again, that's consumer.gov/budget. Now I want to spend a moment on the issue of credit. And Heather, let me bring you in for this. We hear a lot about credit reports, credit scores, credit repair. What does all of that mean?
That's a great question, Ryan. Your credit matters because it affects your ability to get a loan, a job, housing, insurance, and more. So when people talk about your credit, they generally mean your credit history, which describes how you use money. So for example, how many credit cards and loans you have, and whether you pay your bills on time. How you handled your money and bills in the past will help lenders decide if they want to do business with you. Your credit history also helps them determine what interest rate to charge you.
And so who are some of the people or businesses who really focus in and care about your credit history?
So lenders, landlords, insurance companies, and employers are just some who might look at your credit history. And in fact, your credit can make a big difference when you apply for a loan or credit card, look for a job, rent an apartment, buy or lease a car, get insurance, or even buy a phone.
I'm joined right now by Heather Allen, Assistant Director for the FTC's Division of Financial Practices. How do you know if your credit is good?
So-called good or bad credit is based on your credit history. And you can find out what your credit history looks like by checking your credit report, which is a summary of your credit history. The three major credit bureaus, which are TransUnion, Equifax, and Experian, collect credit and other information about you. So in your credit report, you'll find information like your name, address, social security number, credit cards, loans, how much money you owe, whether you pay your bills on time or late, or if you filed for bankruptcy. Now, other businesses pay the credit bureaus to use that information to check your credit. They run a credit check, for example, before they decide whether to lend you money, give you a credit card, or rent you an apartment.
And how can those listening to this show right now, how can they get their credit report? How can they access it?
The easiest way to get your free report from each of the credit bureaus is to go to annualcreditreport.com, or you can call 1-877-322-8228. And right now, because of the pandemic, it's actually easier than ever to check your credit more often for free. That's because everyone can get free weekly credit reports until April 20th, 2022 from the three national credit bureaus. And again, you can get your free report at annualcreditreport.com.
All right, one more time. That website is annualcreditreport.com. So what can everyone do if, let's say, they find a mistake on their credit report?
Well, both the credit bureau and the business that supplied the information to a credit bureau have to correct information that's wrong or incomplete in your report, and they have to do it for free. So to correct mistakes in your report, contact the credit bureau and the business that reported the inaccurate information. Tell them you want to dispute the information on your report.
And how should people go about doing that?
Contact each credit bureau that has the mistake, and you can do that by mail, phone, or online. Explain to them what you think is wrong, and if you need to, send copies of documents that support your dispute. And no matter how you filed your dispute, the credit bureau has 30 days to investigate it and has to give you the results in writing. To learn more about where to call or write, visit ftc.gov/credit.
All right, one more time. That's ftc.gov/credit. That was Heather Allen, Assistant Director for the FTC's Division of Financial Practices. We're talking about budgeting, understanding your credit, dealing with debt, and organizing your finances ahead of this new year. And now I want to bring in Abby Stempson, Director of the National Attorneys General Training and Research Institute's Center for Consumer Protection. Abby, thanks so much for taking a few minutes to join the show. How does your work intersect with that of the FTC on all of this?
So thanks for having me, Ryan. So attorneys general are responsible for enforcing state consumer protection laws and protecting consumers from scams, from deceptive and unfair trade practices, legal robocalling, and data breaches. They fight common consumer frauds conducted by bad actors, as well as consumer harms caused by legitimate businesses who have run afoul of the law. And over the years, the FTC and the states have collaborated on dozens of investigations and numerous joint enforcement actions, as well as consumer education and outreach. And another hugely important area of collaboration is sharing consumer complaints so that we can all learn about those scams doing the most harm, respond to the emerging frauds before they become an even bigger problem, and develop evidence for law enforcement.
Now, I've heard about companies that make these claims they can fix your credit, things like that. Are these companies legit? What should people watch out for?
Great question, Ryan. You see it, the ads all over. Newspapers, on TV and radio, in the mail, and online and email. You might even get calls offering credit repair services. They all make the same claims, things like credit problems, no problem. We can remove bankruptcies, judgments, liens, and bad loans from your credit file forever. And we can erase your bad credit guaranteed. We tell people to do yourself a favor and save some money too. These claims are signs of a scam. Simply don't believe them. The fact is, there's no quick fix to improve your credit worthiness. It can be done, but it takes time and a conscious effort. In reality, no one can legally remove accurate and timely negative information from a credit report. If you spot information in your file that you think is wrong or incomplete, you can and should ask for an investigation. And that's at no charge to you. Some people want to avoid the hassle and hire companies to do this for them. That's okay, but people should know that anything a credit repair company can do legally, you can do for yourself at little or no cost.
All right, let me bring Heather back in. Heather Allen, Assistant Director for the FTC's Division of Financial Practices. Heather, are there laws that protect people from bad actors in the credit repair industry?
Yes. It's illegal for credit repair companies to lie about what they can do for you and to charge you before they've done anything. By law, credit repair firms have to explain your rights in a written contract that also explains their services, how much it will cost, and how long it'll take to get results.
All right, so that brings me to another consumer issue, and that would be debt. And I think it's fair to say that people often struggle with debt, and maybe they're struggling more so during this pandemic. Abby, let me go back to you. And again, I'm joined by Abby Stempson, Director of the National Attorneys General Training and Research Institute's Center for Consumer Protection. What advice can you share about getting out of debt?
Ryan, you're right. Many people face a financial crisis at some point in their lives. Whether the crisis is caused by personal or family illness, the loss of a job, or something else, it can seem really overwhelming. If you or someone you know is in financial trouble, explore all options. Sometimes a little self-help is enough, like making a realistic budget and then making changes accordingly. If that doesn't work, contact your creditors and try to work out a modified payment plan that reduces your payments to a more manageable level. But don't wait until your accounts have been turned over to a debt collector. At that point, your creditors have given up on you. If you need more help, you might want to consider credit counseling, which you can often find by starting with a local college or university, credit union, extension office, or military base. And for further details, check out ftc.gov/debt. And again, that's ftc.gov/debt.
All right, one more time. That's ftc.gov/debt. I'm Ryan Gorman, and we're here offering everyone some practical advice about budgeting, understanding your credit, dealing with debt, organizing your finances, of course, all in advance of this new year. And I'm joined by Colleen Tressler, a consumer education specialist with the FTC's Division of Consumer and Business Education, Heather Allen, Assistant Director for the FTC's Division of Financial Practices, and Abby Stempson, Director of the National Attorneys General Training and Research Institute's Center for Consumer Protection. Heather, let me turn to you now. What if your accounts have already gone to collections? What rights do people have then?
So if you're behind in paying your bills, you may be contacted by a debt collector. But the law says how and when they can do that. They can't call you before 8 a.m., after 9 p.m., or while you're at work if the collector knows your employer doesn't approve of the calls. Collectors can't harass you or lie when they try to collect a debt. And if you ask them in writing to stop calling, they have to stop.
But even if a debt collector stops calling, the debt is still there, correct?
Yes. If a collector calls about a debt, you may want to talk to them at least once to get some details, even if you don't think you owe the debt or think that the collector is contacting you by mistake. That way, you'll have information about the debt that can help you confirm whether it's really yours. And to learn more about your rights, check out ftc.gov/debt.
And one more question on this. What should people do if they think a debt collector has broken the law?
The FTC wants to hear about any debt collectors that might have broken the law. And you can tell us at reportfraud.ftc.gov. Your reports help us build cases that may keep scams and bad practices from happening to others.
All right, again, the website is reportfraud.ftc.gov. Abby, let me turn back to you. Abby Stempson's the director of the National Attorneys General Training and Research Institute's Center for Consumer Protection. I've seen ads for companies that say they can reduce your debt. Sometimes for cents on the dollar, all you have to do is pay that company. What should people know about offers like these?
Brian, unfortunately, scammers try to take advantage of people who are dealing with debt. We've seen people who have had trouble with so-called debt relief organizations. They've done things like promise to settle all of your debts and get you fast forgiveness of your loans when they can. Some organizations try to get you to pay up front before they do anything for you, and that's actually illegal. In fact, if someone tries to sign you up for their program without reviewing your financial situation first, that's not someone you want to work with. And anyone who tells you to stop talking to your creditors without explaining the serious consequences, or who tells you they can stop all debt collection calls or lawsuits, is probably not legit. Walk away. Your listeners can learn more by visiting ftc.gov/debt.
All right. Again, the website is ftc.gov/debt. Let me bring you back in, Colleen. It's been a minute since we chatted with you about some of these issues. Colleen Tressler is a consumer education specialist with the FTC's Division of Consumer and Business Education. We've seen some really devastating natural disasters over the past year, wildfires, hurricanes, tornadoes, flooding, all of that. You say that in a disaster, financial readiness is as important as a flashlight with fully charged batteries. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Absolutely, Ryan. You know, leaving your home or business with little warning can be stressful. But knowing that your financial documents are up to date and in one place and portable can make a big difference at a tense time.
And what advice do you have for getting all of that started?
Bottom line, don't wait. Get started now, well before a crisis you might face. Start with a household inventory with a list of your things along with pictures. This could help you file insurance claims if it comes to it. Then figure out how to keep your records safe. You might want a fireproof file box that's grab and go ready for things like your passports, birth certificates, social security cards, mortgage or rental agreements. Really, anything you want to make sure is safe. Or think about renting a safe deposit box for those kinds of documents, plus maybe family photos, emergency contacts, and military papers, or have the original in one box and a copy in the other.
Are there ways that technology can help us prepare for disasters and also, of course, the aftermath?
You know, with secure storage in the cloud, or USB drives, you can keep copies of all kinds of important family documents. And if you have online bill pay set up, you can track and pay your bills or manage your accounts, even if you have to be out of your home for an extended period of time. And of course, all of these resources are most useful if you keep them current. So we encourage people to make a date with yourself to update them at least once a year, wherever you have them stored. And for your listeners, if you want to find out more about how to prepare for, deal with, and recover from a weather emergency, simply visit ftc.gov/weather-emergencies. And like all the FTC's materials, the site is mobile friendly, so you'll have ready access to information when and where you need it.
All right. Again, that website is ftc.gov/weather-emergencies. And then, of course, if you want to learn more about how to take control of your personal finances and avoid scams and fraud, you can do so at consumer.ftc.gov. That's consumer.ftc.gov and at consumerresources.org. Again, consumerresources.org. Colleen Tressler, Consumer Education Specialist with the FTC's Division of Consumer and Business Education, Heather Allen, Assistant Director for the FTC's Division of Financial Practices, and Abby Stempson, Director of the National Attorneys General Training and Research Institute Center for Consumer Protection at the National Association of Attorneys General. I want to thank all three of you so much for coming on and offering all of that great information to everyone. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Ryan.
All right. And finally, I'm joined by Rear Admiral Denise Hinton, Deputy U.S. Surgeon General, who was recently the Chief Scientist at the Food and Drug Administration. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us about holiday gatherings and staying safe this year. And what are some of the things that everyone should keep in mind with COVID-19 still prevalent in a lot of communities across the country?
Thank you, Ryan, for that and welcome. I just want to say that I, you know, truly believe that everyone should be thinking about safe practices and really working to get their vaccine. We have vaccines available for everyone free of charge, and they can go to their local community, their local grocery store, their local community health center, and be able to get their vaccines. I think the best practice that we could do is getting a vaccine right up front to help protect one another.
And more specifically, for those who are vaccinated, what are the recommendations for them?
Once people are vaccinated, you want to make sure that you get all your vaccines. So for adults, you know, children 12 and older, we want to make sure that folks are getting their vaccines, their full doses. So if you're a Pfizer or Moderna, you're getting your first and second dose. And for adults, that you're making sure that you also get your booster. And then for the children that we have the vaccines available for those getting that vaccine, we do want to make sure that they are getting both vaccines as prescribed. And then still making sure to practice really mitigation practices. And that's making sure to continue to wear a mask when you're indoor gatherings, and also, of course, good hand washing. And then what we've always said, you know, just kind of keeping your hands out of your face, nose, and mouth.
Let me ask you about the recent authorization of COVID-19 vaccines for kids. What do parents need to know about that, especially if they're trying to get their children vaccinated during the holidays?
Thank you. That is just a great question. And that, you know, the vaccines are now available to protect more kids as they prepare to gather with families during the holidays. They're going to spend already spending more time indoors due to cold weather, and they're going to be going to school in person. So that's something we can say is, you know, really encourage folks to get your children vaccinated. And this is going to really help protect them against COVID-19 and reduce any disruptions to in-person activities, including school and getting together for Thanksgiving, Hanukkah, you know, Christmas, of course, is forthcoming. We do know that these vaccines have been tested in children in the 5 to 11 age group and have been shown in clinical trials to be safe and effective. So I would definitely encourage, you know, the parents to go and get their children vaccinated. You know, COVID-19 vaccines for children 5 and older, you know, meet the same rigorous standards as other routine vaccines you can trust will protect your children from the disease.
As someone who is the chief scientist at the Food and Drug Administration, can you talk a little bit about the process that these vaccines have gone through in order to determine their safety?
Oh, it's an incredibly rigorous process. And what folks should know is not the Food and Drug Administration alone that does the reviews. It's the work of a community of scientists and researchers and the like. We have the work ongoing from NIH. We have the work ongoing, of course, with CDC. And we have the work ongoing with the Food and Drug Administration, amongst others, to make sure that we have a safe and efficacious vaccine for all. So in undergoing and reviewing all the data that is received from the company, it undergoes a rigorous review by key scientists within the agency. And then following that rigorous review approval, or let's say for, in this case, approval and authorization under an emergency use authorization, that also then goes before a vaccine, we'll call it like the vaccine review board, and then they will vote, review all the data, discuss it, make a vote, and then it goes forward to another advisory committee, and that's at the CDC. And then the recommendations are all reviewed, and of course the data is all reviewed, and then the approval comes following that. It is an incredibly rigorous process, built and based off the best and safest data and best scientific information that's known to date.
I'm Ryan Gorman, joined right now by Rear Admiral Denise Hinton, the Deputy U.S. Surgeon General, who's recently the Chief Scientist at the FDA. One concern that I often hear from those who are hesitant to get vaccinated involves potential long-term effects from these vaccines. What information do we have on that so far?
The vaccine monitoring has historically shown that the side effects generally happen within 6 weeks of receiving a vaccine dose. For this reason, the FDA required each authorized COVID-19 vaccine to be studied for at least 8 weeks after the final dose. Now, millions of people have received COVID-19 vaccines, some more than a year ago, and no long-term side effects have been detected to date so far. The COVID-19 vaccination will really help protect you from getting COVID-19. You might have some temporary side effects, which are normal signs that your body is building protection. But most common side effects of a COVID-19 vaccine is a sore arm at the injection site. That's been the most common complaint.
Another concern that gets raised sometimes involves worries over potential fertility issues down the road, especially for kids who get the vaccine. Is there any evidence that that is an issue?
A number of people ask that question, and there has not been any data or determination to even suggest that there would be any fertility issues now or in the future. There are no evidence whatsoever that vaccines will cause cancer or infertility months or years from now.
I'm Ryan Gorman, joined by Rear Admiral Denise Hinton, the Deputy U.S. Surgeon General, who was recently the Chief Scientist at the FDA. So what are you expecting to see during the holidays and during these upcoming winter months when it comes to the spread of COVID-19 across the country? Will we see an increase in cases and hospitalizations and deaths kind of like we saw last year?
I would expect, one, that if all people really work together, make a concerted effort and a commitment to get the vaccine and make sure their family members, their friends, the people in the community get their vaccines, then we can see the cases of COVID-19 decline significantly. And also lessen the incidence of there potentially being any mutations or any other variants. It's been shown that, in the communities where most people have gotten their COVID-19 shot, the case counts will come down. So I am hoping, I'm confident, with all of the mitigation strategies and all the safe practice measures and all that done to ensure that the vaccine is available to everyone, five and above, that will get their vaccines, and it will lessen the chances of folks getting COVID-19 or spreading it. And I think this is truly an opportunity for us all to work together to lessen the incidence of people getting sick with COVID-19.
And final question for you, and I think this is the big question on the minds of so many Americans. What does the end game look like for this pandemic? We're 20 months in now. Some of the recommendations, especially those for fully vaccinated Americans, they're wearing on people. How do you see things playing out moving forward?
Let's see. We should focus on what we know. And that's getting people vaccinated is the best way to accelerate the path out of this pandemic. We've made tremendous progress in this country. 81% of adults with one shot, 70% of adults fully vaccinated, and now kids are eligible. And we have the tools to accelerate the path out of this pandemic. It's widely available vaccinations, enough tests for folks who choose to go out to get one, therapeutics to help those who contract the virus, and funding from the American Rescue Plan to protect our economy. We know we do have more work to do to get more people boosters, vaccinate kids, and vaccinate the unvaccinated. That is so important for us to continue to do. So with the end game, I would say that our whole of government approach to this pandemic continues, and we need more people to roll up their sleeves and get vaccinated. We won't let up until it's done, and I hope the public will, do their part in ensuring that they work with us to get the vaccines that are available to them.
Rear Admiral Denise Hinton, the Deputy U.S. Surgeon General, who was recently the Chief Scientist at the Food and Drug Administration. Thank you so much for taking a few minutes to come on the show and share all that insight and expertise. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Ryan. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you and our public today. Thank you.
All right, and that's going to wrap things up for this edition of iHeartRadio Communities. As we wrap things up, want to offer a big thanks to all of our guests and, of course, to all of you for listening. I'm Ryan Gorman. We'll be back same time, same place next weekend. Have a very happy Thanksgiving and stay safe.